Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And Dick Kay is on the line with us. Dick Kay's back on the beat Saturdays 2 to 4 on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM, one of the biggest names in Chicago news and politics for four decades, held the longest on-air TV news job in the history of Chicago's WMAQ-TV, Channel 5, until his retirement last year. ChicagoProgressiveTalk.com, of course, the website for our affiliate in Chicago. Dick Kay, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Tom. Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Great to have you on with us.
Thanks.
It was good talking with you right after the election. Governor Blago, as people
God.
Who are Blagojevich pronunciation afflicted or deficient, rather, are calling him now all across the country. You know, the previous governor, Governor Ryan, is in jail right now. In fact, Governor Blago has been suggesting to George Bush that he should commute his sentence. But even before this, and this was Carl Wilson pointed this out to me this morning here at KPOJ. It was amazing. Your former governor, Otto Koerner, who was the governor from 61 to 68, the way that he got busted was because Marge Everett, who managed the Arlington and Washington Park racetracks, bribed him with some stock, and she decided to list it. This is how it came to light. She listed it on her income tax returns, her federal income tax returns, as ordinary and necessary business expenses in Illinois, bribery. And somebody at the IRS looked at that and goes, oh, she's deducting a bribe from her taxes. I think we ought to tell somebody at the FBI about this.
Yeah, I mean, God bless Marge Everett. I mean, there's a name that will live in infamy.
Yeah, so and so Otto Koerner goes to jail. I mean, you know, then you got Dan Walker, who went to jail in 87. Koerner went to jail in 74. George Ryan went to jail in 2006. Is there something in the water in Springfield,
well,
Dick Kay? And what does this have to do with Chicago, by the way?
Tom, it goes back further back than that. Back in the 20s, there was another governor who was indicted on corruption in a contracting scandal, and he was acquitted, but several members of the jury wound up with state jobs.
Oh.
And then we had a governor in the late 50s, early 60s named Stratton. He was indicted for income tax evasion. He went to trial. They acquitted him. Senator Everett Dirksen testified on his behalf, and they talked about the need to raise funds, and Stratton was acquitted. So actually, there have been six governors of Illinois indicted.
Oh, my. Well, in fact, a little later on in the show, I've got some audio of Everett Dirksen, which is sort of apropos of this. We've just, the LBJ tapes have just been released from 68. And
oh, really?
Just discovered some things that have to do with whether or not the whistle should be blown on political corruption. And I'm curious what your take is on this, Dick Kay. We're talking about Dick Kay, who's on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. And that is, you know, there are a number of legal scholars who are looking at least at the case that Ryan has laid out so far.
Right.
And
Fitzgerald.
Fitzgerald, yeah, thank you. And suggesting that he really doesn't have a case yet. And in fact, this is what Governor Blagojevich is saying, is that, hey, nobody crossed my palms with cash, and it's not against the law to talk.
Well, here's what they say about that. That Fitzgerald says it's a conspiracy to solicit bribes. And by the way,
right.
This is not an indictment yet. This is a criminal complaint. He doesn't have a grand jury yet.
Right.
Doesn't have a grand. Well, he has one, but he doesn't have a grand jury investigation. And a lot of us are curious about this. I mean, people are saying he doesn't have a case. I think they've been a little bit overly. He had suggested that he wanted $500,000 from a tollway contractor. In the conversations, he had suggested that he might not give Children's Hospital here the $8 million grant that they had because he was waiting for a $50,000 campaign contribution. And so those are other factors, and those are the kinds of things they were discussing. But he was discussing this. You and I might sit around and discuss political appointments and what we could get out of political appointments, and I don't think that's unusual, to be honest with you, until you start talking about cash. And in this case, they were allegedly talking about a job for his wife, a high-paying job for her. Maybe they could put her on boards and commissions. I mean, those are personal benefits. They're not political benefits. And so, to me, that's at the heart of the charge, too. But I don't think... Fitzgerald said he had to stop an ongoing crime spree, and I don't know what he stopped by going out to the governor's house at 6 o'clock in the morning and putting him in cuffs. They
he stopped the appointment of perhaps candidate number 5 who showed an interest in paying off Blagojevich.
But all he had to do was call the governor and say, Governor, we've got a warrant for your arrest. We'd like you to come in today. You know, that's what they do with they do that even with some mob figures. To me, that's just a little overly dramatic. And the other thing that bothers
Do you think this is Patrick Fitzgerald getting ready to run for the Senate in a couple of years?
Maybe saying to Obama's people, if Obama's people were involved, Rahm Emanuel, look, I did what you wanted, But the other thing is Robert Grant, who's the head of the special agent of the FBI, saying, if Illinois is not the most corrupt state, I don't know what is, I forget the exact quote, but come on.
Yeah.
I mean, Chicago's in a bid for the 2016 Olympics, and this is an international story, and here's a guy who steps forward and suggests that this is the most corrupt state in the union. He hasn't been to many states, has he?
No, I tell you, I lived in Georgia for 13 years. He's never been to Georgia or Alabama or Louisiana. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean,
but here's my take. He has to go before a grand jury for indictments. The governor wasn't a flight risk. They released him on a signature bond. He went back to work today. I think that there's much more coming because Fitzgerald clearly put out the word that he wants people to come forward who may have been involved in this because he kept appealing to people during his news conference. You know, we'd like to hear from you if you know of something, if you'd like to come in and talk to us. You know, and I think they know that they don't have it nailed down yet till they get those other people.
Yeah, which leads us back to, in this last minute we have here, back to my theory that this is something that was done to stop really a political crime, not a legal crime, and that is, the corrupt selling of a Senate seat.
Well, I guess that's the most stunning charge of all. I just think that's just, to me, it is just stunning. And, of course, now there's a broad net out there, and they're trying to look at the people who were willing. There was one candidate allegedly willing to help him raise $500,000.
Right.
And he talked about, I don't think, Tom, and you've been around this game a long time too, that it is uncommon for somebody to say, what's in it for me?
Yeah.
But I think it's uncommon to say, what monetary advantage can I get out of it, and what can I get personally for my wife and myself?
Well, and that's when it crosses the line. I mean, to talk about a campaign contribution is completely different than to talk about a bribe.
I mean, that's what.
Even though the consequence may be the same, and the same amount of money might even be involved.
Yeah, solicitation of bribes is what they're saying.
Yeah, Dick Kay, he's on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM, and the website ChicagoProgressiveTalk.com. Dick, thanks for dropping by and giving us.
My pleasure, Tom. Anytime.
Good talking with you.
Thank you.
Right after the break, I want to share with you the consequence of not breaking political corruption stories.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm Graham Parker. Welcome to Air America Radio.
This is your home for progressive talk. AirAmerica.com.
Today you're working for the man. Up your feet, we've got a deadline to meet. I'm gonna see you make it.
Helping you win the water cooler wars, Tom Hartman here with you, 21 minutes past the hour. Well, the RNC is all over this immediately. Here I have here's the talking points that go out to all the talk show hosts. I'm waving them in front of the camera for those of you who are watching Tom Vision, our free video web stream. The headline, RNC research briefing, Obama induces labor. Did the Obama campaign use the SEIU to keep Blagojevich at arm's length? Yes, the Republicans are going to politicize this, and I'm telling you, right-wing talk radio is going to be all over it, et cetera. It's, and just, you know, laying this whole thing out, there's got to be some kind of connection here. Well, yeah, the connection is that Obama apparently blew this thing up. You know, here's Fox News. Arrest puts Obama ties in spotlight, right? This is from the main page. Newsbusters, one of the right-wing websites. Will media cover Obama Rod Blagojevich connection? Here over at WorldNet Daily. What did Obama know and when did he know it? But where it gets even stranger, I appear to have lost my notes from this morning on this, but where it gets even stranger is the New York Times even is out there talking about this thing over at Attitude, Will Bunch's blog over at philly.com. He quotes the New York Times. You know, they talk about how ironic it was that it was Obama's call to the Senate, the president of the Senate in Illinois, saying, please override the veto of Governor Blagojevich of an ethics bill. In other words, Obama being, as a United States senator, being the good guy, as a U.S. presidential candidate, being the good guy and saying we need clean politics in Illinois. And calling the Senate leader and saying override the veto of the governor who wanted to keep politics dirty, basically. So that's the setup. And then the New York Times says, beyond the irony of its outcome, Mr. Obama's unusual decision to inject himself into a statewide issue during the height of his presidential campaign was a reminder that despite his historic ascendancy to the White House, he has never quite escaped the murky and insular world of Illinois politics. Say what? I mean, here's even the New York Times saying the opposite of essentially what's the reality. This is the beginning of the, just like during the Clinton time, this is the beginning of the beating up of the president. The trashing of the presidency. I'm telling you, the Republicans, they're going to go nuts with this, and this is just the beginning. Remember during Clinton administration, Hillary fired a travel agent? Oh, my God, we've got to have an investigation. It must be a scandal. She's lost a box of documents from when she was a lawyer 34 years ago? Oh, my God, we've got to have a special prosecutor. Oh, she's now found the documents? Well, that's got to happen. We need a congressional inquiry. And I'm telling you, it is getting downright strange out there. Now, here's where I want to pull together two completely separate things that are not completely separate. You will recall many times on this program I've talked about how in 1980, the original October surprise was the Reagan campaign negotiating with the Iranians, which is why they later were giving them missile parts when they were no longer had hostages. They negotiated with them and said, we'll give you these missile parts after the election if you'll hold these hostages during the election so that Jimmy Carter will go down in flames. Well, it turns out that that wasn't the original October surprise. The original October surprise was in 1968. These tapes have just been made public, the Lyndon Johnson tapes, about how the Nixon campaign was blowing up the efforts of Lyndon Johnson to negotiate peace with Vietnam in 1968. Over 20,000 soldiers died, Americans died, over a million Vietnamese died after this time as a consequence of the Nixon campaign committing treason. This is LBJ telling Everett Dirksen about this so that he knows that this is going on.
The military and the diplomatic situation in Vietnam and reflect the credibility of this administration.
Yeah.
Now, I can identify them because I know who's doing this. I don't want to identify it. I think it would shock America if a principal candidate was playing with a source like this on a matter this important.
Principal candidate being Richard Nixon and, you know, trying to blow up his negotiations with Vietnam.
Yeah. I don't want to do that. But if they're going to put this kind of stuff out, they ought to know that we know what they're doing. I know who they're talking to, and I know what they're saying.
So this is Lyndon Johnson telling Everett Dirksen, the Republican Senate leader from Illinois, that he knows that the Nixon campaign is engaged in what Johnson refers to as treason, and Everett Dirksen agrees and says, yes, it's treason. And this is a week before the election of 1968. And just now, just in the last month, we're finding out about this, and yet none of the American press is covering the fact that the Nixon campaign committed treason that led to the death of tens of thousands of American soldiers, because LBJ at the time thought we shouldn't blow up this story. I'll tell you more right after the break.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmerica.com.
There's a local politician said he needed our vote. He'd put two chickens in every pot and pave all the county roads. But we ain't seen that son of a gun since the day he raised his hand. We're still dodging potholes, eating potted meat and spam. Cause it's all about the money.
Yeah, it's always all about the money. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. By the way, just a quick heads up to our listeners in Portland, Oregon on AM 620 KPOJ tonight at 7:30 at Powell's City of Books on Burnside. I will be be giving a bit of a speech and autographing copies of Cracking the Code now out in paperback, hopefully along with other titles that we have. And we have a contest today for our listeners, for the best, in Sean's opinion, our producer Sean, for the best blog entry over at TomHartman.com today, whoever posts in her, or not, just her favorite entry, that person is going to win a copy of the new book that Lamar Waldron and I wrote called Legacy of Secrecy, The Long Shadow of the JFK Assassination, Robert Kennedy, National Security, The Mafia, and the Assassination of Martin Luther King. This book just released, and Legacy of Secrecy. So, all of that. And now,
you're a mean one, Mr. Grinch.
Our Grinch Alert.
You really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus. You're as charming as an eel, Mr. Grinch. You're a bad banana with a greasy black bean.
Okay, so our Grinch for the day is America's healthcare system and all the Republicans who keep supporting it, and the few Democrats who do as well. And here's the story that highlights it. For our listeners in Seattle, Tacoma, if on the Seattle, Tacoma Craigslist, in the bicycle area, a vintage rebuilt black and chrome 1974-75 Raleigh LTD 3, $200. And he says, and this is why we need national health care. He says, I have for sale an elegant 74-75 Raleigh LTD 3 three-speed rider. She has a beautiful dark complexion, black with gold lettering, original chrome blinds, motorists with delight, making them dream of the day when they too will exit their motorized coffins and finally live. I've spent weeks of wonderful evenings with this machine, replacing bearings, cables, wires only, tubes, tires, brakes, and grease. Everything is tuned and polished, and the wonderful original chrome has gone from stained to mirror-like. I saved all of the levers, pedals, grips, steering shifter and hub, Brooks saddle, everything that 35 years of life hadn't completely worn out. I can tell you, he says, I want to tell you why I'm selling it, because I believe I did not, because believe me, I did not rebuild this bike to sell. This was to be mine and mine only, but I could never enjoy it when I know that a family is suffering. A few months ago, my aunt was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy. Her form of the disease attacked her jaw and her swallowing mechanism. She can neither eat nor talk without some miracle drug. I don't know much about the specifics, but her prescriptions cost $1,200 a month. So, you know, and he goes through all of this. He says, this situation is a prime example. He said, she will receive disability, but in the meantime, she needs assistance from family and friends to fill the gap. Times are tough. We're all doing all we can. This situation is a prime example of why this nation needs a national health care plan. My aunt worked hard all her life, and one darn illness, a treatable illness, has put her in financial dire straits. Not that she had a lot to begin with. Please, everyone, understand this can happen to anyone at any time. We all deserve the peace of mind knowing that simply getting ill will not destroy our lives. We all deserve a health coverage guarantee today. And to help his aunt out, he's selling the love of his life, this beautiful 1974-75 Raleigh LTD 3 vintage rebuilt black and chrome bicycle over at Craigslist in the Seattle Tacoma Craigslist. So, anyhow. Back to what happened in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. In 68, this is just an absolutely amazing story. And by the way, kudos to Robert Perry for really blowing this thing out. Over at consortiumnews.com, you can read the whole story. He wrote it on December 9th. And, you know, he says, you might have thought that when audio tapes were released of President Lyndon Johnson accusing Richard Nixon of treason for sabotaging the Vietnam peace talks, as a 500,000 U.S. troops sat in a war zone, the major U.S. news media would be all over, right? You'd think that this would be a big story. It wasn't. It isn't. It has been only marginally covered. And this is really incredible. I mean, this is, here's, again, LBJ talking to Dirksen, and he's talking about the boss in New Mexico. He's talking about the Nixon campaign is talking with the Vietnamese government and saying, don't negotiate with LBJ. Don't negotiate with LBJ. Wait until the election, and if we can get Nixon elected, we'll give you a better deal.
The agent says that they just talked to the boss in New Mexico, and that he says that you must hold out, just hold on until after the election. Now, we know what Chu is saying to him out there.
Yeah.
We're pretty well informed on both ends.
Yeah.
See, this is where LBJ is saying, you know, we know what's going on. We know that this treason is being committed. Here he's on a conference call with Clark Clifford, Dean Rusk, Rostow and Jones, and talking about Nixon's campaign.
I don't want to have information that ought to be public and not make it so. On the other hand, we have a lot of, I don't know how much we can do there, and I know we'll be charged with trying to interfere with the election.
See, this is, he's talking about, he's got information that Nixon has committed treason. He's blowing up a war and blowing up in order to try and win an election. He's blowing up peace negotiations. And a reporter for the Christian Science Monitor is on the case. And Johnson is trying to shut down the reporter from the Christian Science Monitor because he thinks it's in the best interest of the country not to reveal that one of the two candidates for president has committed treason. He continues.
He has a deadline to meet if he publishes it.
Right.
He speculated that should the story be published, it will create a great deal of excitement.
Right.
Now, what he gets from Saigon is well and good and fine, but if he gets it from us, I want to be sure that we try to do it such a way that our motives are not questioned and that if the public interest requires it, and two, and that's the only thing I want to operate under. I'm not interested in the politics of it. The second thing is I want to be sure that what we say is can be confirmed.
So here's LBJ, and he's very concerned about this. And Clark Clifford says, no, this would be bad for the country.
Dean just says he doesn't think that we can confirm or say anything or have any comment in connection with it on the basis of the sensitivity of the information.
Well, I would think there'd be a good deal of merit to that. I'd go on to another also.
So the audio is really bad, but you listen carefully. Here's Clark Clifford saying this would be bad for the country.
That is, I think that some elements of the story are so shocking.
Some elements of this story are so shocking
in their nature that I'm wondering whether it would be good for the country.
That I'm wondering whether it would be good for the country.
To disclose the story and then possibly have a certain individual.
To disclose this story and then have a certain individual, that of course being Richard Nixon.
Elected. To cast his whole administration under such doubt.
And it would cast his whole administration under such doubt that he couldn't govern. So here Clark Clifford is saying, you know, if Nixon wins the election, and we reveal here 2 days before the election, this is November 2nd, that we know that he's committed treason, that will be a bad thing for the United States. Now, these were politicians who were really, LBJ was clearly really struggling with this thing. In another one of these clips, he talks about how we've got a peace here. We've got a couple of weeks of peace. The killing has stopped. And now Nixon is going in and blowing this thing up, and it's going to start again, and people are going to die. He says this to Everett Dirksen. And then, by the way, the next day, Nixon calls him up. And he confronts Nixon about it. And Nixon lies through his teeth and says, I don't know anything about it. But then later on, we've got in the Nixon tapes, you got Nixon sitting with Chuck Colson talking about how LBJ had bugged him back in 68. And that's why in 72, he should be able to bug Watergate. That was his whole justification right up until the very end. So here now today with Blagojevich and with Fitzgerald, we have the public disclosure of political corruption before it happens. And there's some speculation, I don't know if there's any evidence or not, that perhaps even the Obama folks or Obama or some of his people might have encouraged this public disclosure for the public good. And contrast that with 1968, when Lyndon Johnson had proof positive and the Christian Science Monitor was about to blow open the story. And the Johnson administration quashed it because his attorney general said, no, this is going to be bad for the country. That the Johnson administration said, no, we're not going to blow this story up. We're not going to let America know that Richard Nixon is committing treason. Because what if he gets elected and becomes president? He will be a disabled and crippled president. And that's not good for America. And on the other hand, now, this morning, I've got a press release from the RNC, the Republican Party, already trying to tie Obama to what's going on in the Illinois governor's office when he has done a spectacular job of not just keeping distance from it, but apparently helping expose it. So here we have the Republicans once again playing politics with this nation to the detriment of our country. 45 minutes past.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program. This is your home for progressive talk. AirAmerica.com.
It's Christmas time. What if we did create peace on earth? And good and enough, for all we desire is well. What if we all started spreading the news? There's nothing to fear anymore. And we are connected, one family of light.
Yes, happy holidays. Welcome back. 9 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Just a quick overview. The Bank of America has agreed to extend a loan to Republic Windows and Doors so they can pay their workers. Hey, good news. It might have taken the governor's press conference, Governor Blagojevich. A tentative agreement between George Bush and the Democrats, $15 billion for the car companies, although Bush gets to appoint a car czar so he can still try to bust the unions. I'm telling you, the whole Republican trip here is about busting unions. There were no unions in the banks, and that's why they were really, really quick to grease their palms. Former EPA head Carol Browner from the Clinton administration may take a position in the new White House as head of environmental, energy, and climate-related matters. We'll see how that shakes out. The House Ethics Committee is going to expand its investigation into Charlie Rangel. Ouch. And yesterday, New Jersey's 13-member Civil Union Review Commission unanimously concluded that states legislators should allow gay couples to marry. tip of the hat to the folks in New Jersey for beginning down an appropriate and healthy road. Let's bring all of us into this. John in Mountain View, California, listening on Green 960. Hey, John, what's on your mind today? Thanks
for calling.
Good morning,
Tom. I was just wondering if LBJ, obviously this wasn't the Stone Age. They knew about the polling data. They knew they would throw it probably, it was only less than 500,000 votes, so Al Gore won by more popular than Humphrey lost by in a tough three-way.
That's right.
If he knew, if LBJ, obviously a crap, they called him Lucky Lyndon in Texas. He only won by about 50 votes in Senate, 48. And if he obviously knew what he was doing here, why not go public? And the president know it? When did he know about Nixon?
This is a 27-second clip from a conversation. You can find out the whole tapes. We'll put a link to it on our homepage at tomhartman.com by the end of the show. But this is LBJ talking to Everett Dirksen. And them agreeing that this is treason. This is a week before the election. Here's the conversation.
Are some of our folks, including some of the old China lobby, are going to the Vietnamese embassy and saying, please notify the president that if he'll hold out to November the 2nd, they could get a better deal. Now, I'm reading their hand, Everett. I don't want to get this in the campaign.
Okay.
And they oughtn't to be doing this. This is treason.
I know.
And he says, this is treason. And Everett Dirksen says, I know. And Everett did call up Richard Nixon, and Nixon did call up LBJ 2 days later and claimed that he wasn't doing it. And, you know, at that point, LBJ had to decide whether he was going to go public with the story or not. And he might have made the political calculation that going public with the story would look like sore, you know, like he was trying to do an October surprise and might backfire. I don't know. I mean, he's throughout these tapes over and over and over again, LBJ keeps saying, I don't want to politicize this. I just want it to stop. And it never stopped. And another 20,000 Americans died and another million Vietnamese died as a consequence of it.
Well, then the question begs to be asked why President Carter didn't blow the whistle on Bush's father and Reagan. You know,
that's a good question, and it's a question I'd like to ask Jimmy Carter someday. I don't know that they knew. You know, I mean, Bill Casey was the guy who, according to Barbara Ehrlich and who was there, you know, in the White House at the time, and others who have written about this, Bill Casey was the guy who brokered the deal for the Iranians to hold on to the hostages in 1980 to make Carter look bad and get Reagan elected. And Bill Casey agreed to testify before the congressional inquiry on Iran-Contra to that and told his lawyer, Milton Gould, that he was going to testify honestly and fully. And Gould is on record as saying that. And the morning that he was supposed to testify, Bill Casey and his reward for being the campaign manager of Reagan's campaign was he made him head of the CIA. So here he is sitting in the CIA headquarters. And that afternoon, he's supposed to testify before Congress. That morning, he has a sudden seizure. He falls off his chair on the floor. They take him to Bethesda Naval Hospital. They open up his skull, and they remove the left parietal portion of his brain. That's known as Broca's region. It's the part of the brain that controls speech. They literally cut out his tongue from the brain. And he never had an opportunity to testify on that. So it may well be that there just wasn't the evidence out there. I don't know. But what we're seeing is this was on record as saying he's a good guy and he's going to keep him on, or at least strongly suggesting it. The Democrats are saying this is not a good thing. This is not a good thing. Joe in San Diego. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Tom. I saw that the deal with the Johnson tapes on Yahoo and actually went through and listened to some of them. And I thought that the tape of Lyndon Johnson talking to Richard Nixon after the election, after it's already done, Lyndon Johnson implores Richard Nixon to call the South Vietnamese and tell them to come to the negotiating table, because that was the crux of it. The North Vietnamese had accepted the idea that the South Vietnamese could come and sit and negotiate, and then the South Vietnamese didn't show up.
Right.
And Johnson implored him. Now it's no longer a political thing. It's Johnson trying to get this peace.
Right. The election is over. Nixon is the president-elect, and LBJ is begging him for peace.
Right.
And Nixon blows him off.
And Nixon says, Well, I don't know. You know, I really don't know the South Vietnamese. I don't have any contacts there. It's just a lie.
Yeah,
and
it really is. And another 20,000 people, some of them my friends, died as a consequence of that. Joe, thanks for the call. We'll continue this conversation in the next hour. Your thoughts on what's going on in Chicago, what's going on with the nation, and, of course, don't forget our contest for the blog post, 957.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Obama induces labor. Yes, that's the headline in the RNC talking points to right-wing talk show hosts all across the country. We received our copy this morning at 9:14 a.m. Eastern Time, 6:14 a.m. Pacific Time. That would have been about 4 hours ago. Yeah. Service Employees International Union acted as an intermediary between Blagojevich and the Obama camp. Blah, blah, blah. Right. This is from the RNC, the organization that turned the stars upside down on the elephant. Remember, this is saying, oh yeah, you want to clean up politics? Well, we'll smear you about that. Somewhat lengthy riff about Lyndon Johnson in the last hour. I really think all this stuff is tied together. This is the corruption and destruction of politics in the United States, by and large, by the Republican Party, because they know it's the only way they can hold power. When your agenda is to serve the interests of large corporations and people who earn lots and lots of money, you can have a lot of power. You can have a lot of money. You get all the think tanks. I mean, the Heritage Foundation and the Cato Institute, all these think tanks, they're doing very well right now. Thank you very much. Liberal think tanks are out with their tin cups. Hey, you get a spare dime. The cons are doing very well, and there's plenty of money floating around the RNC, but you can't get enough votes to get elected that way. If that's your base, as George W. Bush famously said, as he was talking to a group of very well-heeled people, he says, look here, we have the haves and the have-mores. Some people call you the elite, I call you my base. Remember that? It was true. So when that's your base, when that's the constituency that you're serving, you can't get elected. You can get a lot of money. You can get some talking points out there. You might be able to get people to start using phrases like death tax. Maybe you can try and make the unions look bad. You might be able to filibuster some bills, to threaten to stop some, the unions who hold 3 million jobs in their, the auto workers who hold 3 million jobs in their hand, working class jobs, union jobs. I mean, this is really what this is all about from the Republicans' point of view. Why do you have two Republican senators from Louisiana or Alabama, is it Louisiana or Alabama? Alabama, I guess it is, who are saying, we're thinking of filibustering this thing, when they have given hundreds of millions of dollars to non-U.S. auto companies to locate in their state in a non-union environment. I mean, this is all about union busting. It's all the Republicans have ever been about, is union busting. So we have this incredibly corrupt history. Richard Nixon in 1968 blowing up the election. And I'm no fan of Lyndon Johnson. The Great Society was a good effort, and he signed the Civil Rights Act. LBJ did some good things, but I was one of those people out on the streets in 1967, 68, getting tear gassed in East Lansing, Michigan, because of Lyndon Johnson and his policies. I'm not here to defend LBJ. But he genuinely got it by 68. The war was not the little political success he thought it was going to be when he first got into it. And he genuinely wanted to stop it. It is so clear from these tapes, particularly as the last caller pointed out, his pleading with Nixon after the election, after Nixon is now president-elect, to show up at the peace talks there in Saigon, to get that thing moving again. And you recall, Nixon determined that if he could keep that war going for another 4 years, he could use it to bridge the 72 election. Remember the 72 election? He had a secret plan for peace. His secret plan was to bug the Democratic National Committee, the DNC, in the Watergate Hotel. And when he was sitting talking with Chuck Colson, he says, Nixon says to Colson, you know, they bugged me back in 1968 because they said I was interfering with an election. Well, the Democrats, they're talking about the Vietnam War. That's interfering with an election. I think we should bug them. And Chuck Colson said, yes, sir, you're right. And off they went to the races. So this corruption of the political process, and now we have a politician and a political machine, as it were, the Obama administration, that's saying, apparently, we won't have anything to do with that. We're not going to have anything to do with that kind of political corruption. And so what do we have? We have the RNC research briefing coming out here. Oh, no, it's all, you know, look at the corruption in the Obama. It is all about the Obama administration. WorldNet Daily's headline, what did Obama know and when did he know it? Unanswered questions alarm anti-corruption investigators. Yeah. Newsbusters.org. What will media cover Obama-Blagojevich connection? Yeah, it's called Playing the Rest. Fox, we report, you decide. FoxNews.com, right on their homepage. Arrest puts Obama ties in spotlight. That's their number two headline. Right below potholes ahead for bailout. Yeah, of course, we've got to bust the unions. That's really important. And the reason why, by the way, the reason why for the Republicans it is so important to bust the unions, particularly in Michigan, Ohio, and the Midwest, the reason why is because there is only one strong, intact, relatively progressive infrastructure in the entire United States of America. It's not the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party can be taken over and corrupted by the Reich, and has been in the past. It's moving in the right direction, hopefully. But the one solid progressive organization with an actual, there's actual elected officials, they actually operate as small-d democracies, are the unions. That's it. When Ronald Reagan came into office in 1980 on the heels of his October surprise, telling the Iranians, if you just guys hold the hostages for another couple months, you'll recall those hostages were released as Reagan put his hand on the Bible. Made for great split-screen TV, you know? And that was the Iranians, as Robert Perry also points out in his consortium news piece. And this was the Iranians' way of saying, okay, Reagan, we've kept our end of the deal. In fact, we're going to push your nose in it a little bit and remind you that we know, you know what. So you better keep your end of the deal. So literally, at the moment Reagan was being sworn in, the Iranians were releasing the hostages. And you recall, you know, 2 months earlier, Reagan was considered an incredible long shot for president. He was down, I mean, down more than double digits, more than 10 points down in the polls. Because everybody just, you know, they thought that Reagan, he was Ronald Reagan, the cowboy. I mean, nobody took him seriously. And it was the hostages, it was the October surprise of 1980 that got him elected and that transformed America. So the reason why these guys, the reason why these Republicans are trying to take down GM and Ford, the reason why is because they want to take down the unions. And the reason why Bush might go along with this if he can appoint an auto czar is because, in my opinion, and we'll see, but I predict that one of the first things that he's going to do is go after the unions. Labor is only about 10% of the cost of a car. It's not about labor. And it's not about globalism or coming up with new ideas. Tom Friedman's got another cockamamie op-ed over in the New York Times today. You know, it's... Yes, if we only just threw open the doors and everybody... Come on, Tom. It's about destroying the unions because they're the only progressive institution in this country left. There's nothing else that's got that kind of strength. There is no other organization. Now, you could argue that the Obama campaign was that kind of an organization, because Obama mobilized millions of people. Maybe as many people as there are members of the unions. I don't know. But he organized millions of people, or at least hundreds of thousands of people, got them out knocking on doors, going door to door, showing up at meetings, showing up in neighbors' living rooms, all these kind of things. And a fine thing it was. But is that going to hold together? I mean, it's not like a union where you've got people who work together every day, who get together periodically, you know, regularly, have monthly meetings, they have elections, they elect leaders, they hold each other accountable, they operate in a transparent way, they're democracies. It's not like that. The one movement in this country that really has the strength to strongly push a progressive agenda, the unions. And when Reagan came into office, a quarter of all the jobs in America were union jobs, and now it's about 8% in the private sector. The war on labor. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Rachel Maddow.
Tom Hartman.
Ron Kuby.
And more.
Download all of your favorite shows with Air America On Demand. Sign up now at airamerica.com.
Yeah, that's you, Rod. Governor Blago. You're the bug. 21 minutes past the hour. Your radio support group for We the People. Tom Hartman here with you. 866-303-2270. Our telephone number, tomhartman.com, for our live free chat room, and also for our blog there, where you can post your comments if you would like on the topic of the day. And in Sean's opinion, her favorite post of the day is going to win a copy. Or not win, we're going to get a copy, an autographed copy, at least autographed by me. The book is both by Lamar Waldron and me, of Legacy of Secrecy, The Long Shadow of the JFK Assassination, Robert Kennedy, National Security, the Mafia, and the Assassination of Martin Luther King. Gregory in Columbia, South Carolina, listening to WOIC. Hey, Gregory, what's up?
Hey, I just wanted to respond. You were talking about LBJ... trying to decide whether or not to bring Nixon's treason to the public attention.
Right.
And I think that in not doing so, he contributed to the detriment that he was trying to avoid, that he thought would be caused if he did bring it to public attention.
I agree with
you. The same thing happened when Ford pardoned Nixon.
Yep, absolutely.
It's just this policy of sweeping things like this under the rug. Because
and the same thing happened when Clinton decided not to pursue the investigations into Iran-Contra.
Exactly. And what you're talking about with Reagan, like you said, these things are swept under the rug because they say, well, it's going the American people can't handle the truth. It's going to tear up our society. And we're looking at the same thing with the exiting administration now. They're probably not going to face any trials either.
Yeah. This is
And the history books aren't going to report things as they happened.
No, you're right. Here's one more clip. This is just a quickie. This is LBJ telling Dirksen what's going on. That Nixon's people are messing with a foreign power in the middle of a war, and they've been
quit. My judgment is that Nixon ought to play it just like he has all along. That I want to see peace come the first day we can.
He's talking publicly.
That it's not going to affect the election one way or the other. The conference is not even going to be held until after the election. They have stopped shelling the cities. They have stopped going across the DMZ. We've had 24 hours of relative peace. Now, if Nixon keeps the South Vietnamese away from the conference... Well, that's going to be his responsibility. Up to this point, that's why they're not there. I had them signed on board until this happened.
My problem is that you...
Hang on just a second.
Well, now, what do you think we ought to do about it?
Well, I better get in touch with him, I think, and tell him about it.
I think you better tell him that his people are saying to these folks that they oughtn't to go through with this meeting. Now, if they don't go through the meeting, it's not going to be me that's hurt. I think it's going to be whoever's elected, and maybe my guess, him.
Yeah.
And I think they're making a very serious mistake, and I don't want to say this.
Yeah.
And you're the only one I'm going to say it to.
Yeah.
I know this, that they're contacting a foreign power in the middle of a war. And it's a damn bad mistake.
Oh,
now, I don't want to say so. And you're the only man that I have enough confidence in to tell them. But you better tell them they better quit playing with it. And the day after the election, I'll sit down with all of you and try to work it out and be helpful. Yeah. But they oughtn't to knock out this conference. You just tell them that their people are messing around in this thing, and if they don't want it on the front pages, they better quit it.
There you go. And talking to Everett Dirksen, ironically, the senator from Illinois, the senior senator from Illinois, who tried to stop Nixon. So, you know, Gregory, anyhow, you wanted to make one quick point, and then we got to move along.
Yeah, my problem is that LBJ was focusing on the risk of coming off as trying to tip scales in the election with an October surprise.
Yep.
And that's not what it was about. It was about bringing it to public attention so that people could react.
Yep, absolutely. I well said. Thank you, Gregory. Armin in Braden in Florida. Hey, Armin, what's up?
I want to cover a few things if you'll let me, and I respectfully disagree.
You may have one, Armin.
Right now.
You may have one.
Well, there's a whole bunch of people
want to get in here.
Okay, you're talking about Democrats. Okay, look at the money this election cycle that Wall Street gave to the Democrats. And look at the Democratic bail of Wall Street. And now AIG saying, screw you, we're giving bonuses anyway. And you don't see the Democrats moving against that.
Well, and did you see the headline today about AIG? Now it turns out they're $10 billion in debt because they've been gambling all along and they just lost another big gamble.
The Democrats still bailed them out. So Tom, let's deal with reality here. And I think this is all about this governor of Illinois. What he's doing is an inversion of what's considered normal in our election cycle.
Right.
What do you think's going on in the Senate right now? The bribery to get that bill through for the bailout of the CEOs of the auto companies. The briberies, all kinds of things going on. The only difference is, stop and think, Tom. This governor was soliciting his suitors and auctioning off a seat, but our whole system is so corrupted by this bunch in Washington, it's just different.
Very, very well said, Armin. Very well said. And that's why we need public financing of our elections, and it's why we need stronger transparency laws, and it's why in Illinois they need better laws about the transparency of the electoral process, which is the ethics laws, which is what Barack Obama called the Senate president to say, override the governor's veto of this new ethics legislation because we need better ethics in Illinois. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Hi, I'm Ralph Nader. If you want to listen to realities instead of myths, tune in to Air America.
Your home for progressive talk. AirAmerica.com.
The love that you give me and the song that you put in my sky. You don't know how much you lifted me up, but I feel so alive. Oh, thank you for
welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Talk radio for the sane among us, the Tom Hartman radio program, and maybe even the crazy. Could it be? Okay. Here from the wire services in what is being called one of the most daring escape attempts in the history of law enforcement, Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich today offered the U.S. Senate seat vacated by President-elect Barack Obama to the FBI agent who took him into federal custody. According to U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald, the astonishing escape attempt occurred moments after Mr. Blagojevich was handcuffed by the agent, who was wearing a wire, and captured the entire expletive-deleted, laden offer on tape. You can be the bleeping junior senator from bleeping Illinois if you let me out of these bleeping handcuffs, Mr. Fitzgerald read from a transcript. And if that mother bleeping Barack Obama tries to bleep with me, I'll bleep him up, end quote. According to Mr. Fitzgerald, when I say bleep, he didn't really say bleep on the tape, adding, and I'm going to keep making that joke until one of you bleepers laughs at it. Governor Blagojevich has also been charged with a laundry list of federal crimes, including stealing his haircut from the dad on the Brady Bunch. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Mike in Los Angeles. Hey, Mike, what's up?
I have a question about this LBJ tapes.
Yes, sir.
When I think of Johnson, President Johnson, I think of how he was bankrolled, his political career was bankrolled by the Brown brothers, who KBR, Root, Hal Burton fame, made their fortune in the New Deal. And I can't help but think how, just like Dick Cheney, he was part of starting up this Vietnam War when the Kennedy administration, pesky Kennedys, wouldn't. And I want to not be partisan here.
Right.
You're playing, I know
Mike, is there, you know, other than saying, you know, Democrats bad, is there a point here?
It's a game you like to play about good cop, bad cop on the American people. But,
LBJ was playing?
I have a question about whether or not these secret tapes. Did you cut me off?
No, I didn't.
Okay. I have a question about whether these secret tapes are as forthright and legitimate or illegitimate as all these intentional leaks that we hear about, whether those tapes were scripted or not for the American people.
I would strongly recommend, Mike,
if the government took care of the American people,
Mike,
as well as laborers or people at the home, we wouldn't need unions.
Mike, they're not scripted. I just thank you very much. They're not. I'm serious. You go over and listen to them, and you get that these people. I mean, this LBJ was recording it for history, obviously, as probably all, I don't know. Maybe it ended with Clinton. I just don't know. But I'm assuming that LBJ he had to have known that his own system was taping him. But you listen to these things, and you get it. This guy was in agony over. And you hear Nixon on there just weaseling his way through this stuff. I mean, literally committing treason. So, not a good one. Paul in Carbondale, Illinois, listening to WINI. Hey, Paul.
Hi, Tom. I just want to say, don't blame me. I voted for Rich Whitney. But the thing about the Republic windows and doors blaming Bank of America because they can't meet their payroll, which you just pointed out, payroll is like 10% of a company's expenses. That seems like a weapons of mass destruction red herring diversion to me. They're taking all the anger and putting it on Bank of America.
Well, and you know who owns 40%? If I may interrupt you, you know who owns 40% of Republic windows and doors? J.P. Morgan. Chase the bank.
Well, according to this information I have, Richard Gilman owns Republic Windows and Doors, and 2 weeks ago he bought a plant in Iowa that also makes windows and doors, and they've created it 2 weeks ago called Echo Windows and Doors, and it lists Sharon Gilman as its manager. Sharon Gilman happens to be Richard Gilman's wife.
Yeah.
The Zimmerman, who was Republic's marketing director, is now listed as the contact on Echo Windows and Doors.
Yeah.
2 weeks ago, they started moving machines out of Republic Windows and Doors.
Yep.
They don't know what happened to them, but 2 weeks ago,
they went to Iowa.
Echo Windows and Doors in Iowa started going from one shift to two shifts. I believe that you talk about union busting.
Yep,
I don't know that Iowa, this is a non-union plant, but I strongly suspect that what they're doing is moving from Chicago. And by the way, Chicago gave them millions of dollars. They're in a TIF district there. So that should belong to, that factory should belong to the people of Chicago and to the workers who are owed millions of dollars. That factory should be turned over to the workers.
Yeah, the Iowa factory is non-union, Paula. This is union busting. And what you've identified is, I think, one of the critical issues of our time, and that is how corporations play jurisdictions, play cities or counties or states off.
Exactly,
one
right
against
to
the
bottom.
Other. Yeah, absolutely, it is. Paula, thank you very much for pointing that out. This reminds me of what happened when Boeing said that they were going to move their headquarters. What city wants to offer us the most incentives? And you had, you know, cities competing with each other. I mean, and it's not just Boeing. I mean, it's company after company after company does this. And frankly, I think it should be illegal. We should simply say, you know, that pass a law that says that jurisdictions cannot compete within the United States against each other for because here you've got, I mean, the state of Alabama or the state of Alabama giving over $200,000, $255,000, as I recall. We had the documents yesterday. I don't have them in front of me right now, but my recollection, I'm pretty sure, is over $255,000 per job to Mercedes to locate a factory in that state. You know, over time, you're going to get some tax revenues from that. Sure. And over time, you've got happy workers and you've got happy voters. But is that the way to do it? You know, it should be based on the merits. It should be based on, you know, okay, we've got good infrastructure, we've got good schools, we've got good, you know, good hospitals. But, you know, hey, we're going to give you some money, we're going to grease your palms. I mean, this is just another variation on bribery, in my humble opinion. Mike in Portland, Oregon, listening to KPOJ. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Tom. Yeah. A while ago, you were talking about the Republican assault against Obama that's coming, you know, in much the way that you know, Clinton was beleaguered for his entire.
Yep. Yeah, and it's going to be against Obama and the unions. I mean, it's basically, this is the Republicans. You think they're out of power? They're not, and they're going to do everything they can to take down any shred of progressive politics in this country.
Well, I want to suggest, though, that the landscape is altered in a fundamental way. The situation is different in a way that's fundamentally different than back in 92 through the ensuing 8 years of Clinton. And that's the grassroots movement that helped put Obama over the top in the election. We're still here. And the Republicans are famous for fighting the next war with the same tactics of the last war.
Right.
They're going to get their butts burned bad because there are going to be reprisals.
It may be, Mike, but here's my concern.
But the people, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, you've got a lot of people who you know, idealists who went out and just worked their butts off for Barack Obama. And in my opinion, rightfully so. But although time will tell, I'm very hopeful. But I keep saying this guy is a Rorschach test to wait until he starts to govern. I mean, the most significant piece of governance we saw during the election was his voting to basically give George Bush a pass on FISA and keep wiretapping people and nobody goes to jail over that thing. And, you know, that's got a lot of people. See, I'm still scratching my head over that one. So what's going to happen is Obama will, as he begins to govern, no matter how wonderful and progressive he is, he could be Russ Feingold, you know, in the White House. If Russ Feingold was president and doing everything that he will do things that will upset his supporters and some of his supporters. And some of them are going to fade away. It's not like being a union member where you're really, you know, this has to do with the woof and weave of your livelihood. And so I'm just concerned that coalition that Obama pulled together may be a lot more fragile than you think, Mike.
Well, I'm suggesting that coalition is now has to shift its purpose to a couple of priorities. One is to keep Obama focused on the things, the issues that got him elected. And two, to protect him, not Obama right or wrong, but to protect him against gratuitous partisan attacks, whether Republicans are attacking just because that's what they do. They have to come to understand that their standard bearers and their institutions are going to be subject to some reprisal, boycotts, whatever, if they attack just to attack.
Right.
At the same time, I've been cautioning people all along, Barack Obama is not Jesus just because their middle initial is H, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Please, don't think he can walk on water.
I'm telling you, there's a lot of people, this is their first introduction to politics, and that's their inclination, is to think that he is and that he does, and he won't. You know, that's the simple reality. But he's going to have to compromise. He's going to have to, you know, there's going to be some fistfights here. There's going to be some tough times, and the economy is going to get a lot worse over the next 6 months before it gets better, given all these jobs that have been, you know, just wiped out in the last 6 months. Those are going to decrease demand to the point where you're going to see the consequence of that in supply in the overall economy, and
oh, sure.
It's going to take a while for the stimulus that he's talking about, you know, from light rail to infrastructure. It's going to take a while. So I'm just hopeful people can hold it together. Mike, I got to run here, but thank you very much for the call. I do appreciate it. And 866-303-2270, our telephone number, tomhartmann.com, our website, and live chat room, airamerica.com for our free live daily video stream. And don't forget, if you're in the Portland area, Powell's tonight at 7:30. We'll be right back.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program. Fresh opinions and news you can use. This is your home for progressive talk. AirAmerica.com.
Before the hour. Speaking the truth to multinational corporations we'd really rather you didn't know all about. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Charlie in Fort Lauderdale listening on WINS. Hey, Charlie, what's up? Charlie? No Charlie. Okay, Ellen Ratter with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, on the line with you, with us. Ellen, you called in just in the nick of time. What's up?
Okay, well, first of all, before I go into some hard news here, I'll go into a little, actually this is even harder news, but a little soft news. And, this was picked up. I don't normally give other people's news, but apparently U.S. military, this actually came off of Fox News, but U.S. military interrogators have blasted music at detainees. These are the song, according to the British law group Reprieve, that they have used to torture people. Are you interested? Enter
sure.
Sandman by Metallica, Bodies by Drowning Pool, Shoot to Thrill by AC/DC, Hell's Bells by AC/DC, I Love You from Barney and Friends, Born in the USA, Babylon, White America, and Sesame Street.
Good grief. That's it. It's an eclectic list, at least.
It is an eclectic list. I mean, I'll tell you, there is no end to how this government ceases to amaze me.
The real sad thing is, I mean, we've talked with a couple of professional interrogators on this show, and both one for the, from the police and one for the military over the last year and a half, and to a person, and over the years, I've probably talked to three or four anyway. And there have been several good books written on this, that to a person, they all say the most effective way to get information from people is to befriend them, is to cause them to feel that what they did was wrong and that you're going to give them, you know, that they're now contrite and you're going to give them some forgiveness and there's some, you know, light at the end of the tunnel for them in some meaningful way. And, I mean, that's how the British did it. That's how they busted up the rings there. That's how the Spanish did it. It's how the Germans did it. The recent Germans have done. And you know, torturing people just gets you the worst information. People tell you what they think
people
you want.
People tell you
hear,
whatever they want.
That's right. That's right. Or whatever they think you want, you know. Yeah. So you could argue whether blasting music at somebody is torture or not, but it's just stupid interrogation methods is what it is. Anyway.
Couple other interesting things. Well, today's the most interesting. Today we got a briefing at the White House about what they are planning on doing the complete agreement that's coming out. They are calling this a bridge financing for two possibilities: restructuring or bankruptcy. And they
either one of which involves busting the unions.
They are saying that they and the Democrats are in somewhat agreement on this and that all stakeholders are going to have to come to the table to everybody's satisfaction. So it may include some union stuff that we may not like, but it also is definitely going to include some CEO stuff that we don't like.
Ellen, how come we haven't heard anything about the people working on the trading floors at the J.P. Morgan or, you know, some of these companies that have been bailed out, getting billions and billions of dollars, having to take a cut in their pay from, you know, $300,000-$500,000 a year down to $100,000-$200,000 a year?
Well, you know, the reason we haven't heard about it is because Wall Street is protecting its own.
Right, because it's not happening.
Right. And so what we're hearing about, as you know, is the auto companies, and everybody's on board. And frankly, the Democrats are doing this. However, the Democrats are working with the White House, and then you have Republicans. Now, it's interesting, the Bush administration sent up the chief of staff from the White House, Mr. Bolton, today to talk to the House Republican Senate Conference, who is saying they're going to filibuster, they're going to filibuster, they're going to filibuster.
Yeah, and you know, part of the problem on the Democratic side is you've got a bunch of Southern Democrats in right-to-work states who are taking a lot of money from big corporations and trying to hang on to seats in districts that are conservative enough that they may easily go Republican, and they're no friends of labor. You know, some of these more conservative Democrats, and you combine them with the Republicans, and you've got a nasty, toxic brew.
The one thing the White House did say is that an uncontrolled bankruptcy at this point would have severe consequences for the economy. And again, you have the White House in line with the Democrats on this, and the Republicans are saying just let them go bankrupt.
Yeah. Well, do you think
it's been an interesting juxtaposition, something I didn't expect from the Bush White House.
It's not unlike the immigration battle, you know.
Right.
Do you think that the Senate Republicans and their leadership have 40 votes to maintain a filibuster in the Senate?
I don't know. One of the other things the Bushies said today is that they want to have a viable manufacturing base in companies that exist today.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they recognize, I think, that you cannot let three automakers from the United States go down, and the automakers in this country are foreigners. I mean, I think they're pretty aware of that.
Yeah, although...
And I think the Republicans, some of the Senate Republicans are business, and don't forget, a lot of these Senate Republicans are from states like Mississippi or Tennessee that have foreign plants, auto plants in them. Let's not forget that little... piece of the action.
No, that's the beginning and end of it, in my opinion. I mean, you got Shelby and who's the other senator from Alabama down there, talking about how they're gonna blow this thing up and filibuster it because, sanctimoniously, and really what it's all about is they gave hundreds of millions of dollars to Mercedes and Honda and Nissan and Toyota to locate factories in their state. Or in their states, I guess there's a couple of them down there. But God forbid we should do anything to help the auto companies in Michigan and Ohio and Indiana and Illinois, which happen to be UAW, as opposed to the ones down in Alabama that are not.
Right. I clearly think, but you do have people like Senator Levin, Senator Stabenow, Sherrod Brown from Ohio, that really are not going to let this just go and screw the worker. I really do believe that.
I sure hope you're right. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thanks, Ellen, for the update.
Thank you.
For talking with you. We will be back with Everything You Know Is Wrong, the third basic instinct. Alex Key is going to enlighten us about that, or perhaps we'll have an interesting debate. We'll see. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hi, this is Barack Obama, and I am happy to be on Air America and happy to listen to Air America.
This is your home for progressive talk. AirAmerica.com. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, sometimes you know what you know, and sometimes you don't know what you don't know, and sometimes you know what you don't know, and sometimes what you think you know, you don't know. Well, you know, and sometimes, as the Firesign Theater says...
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync. You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Is everything you know wrong about human nature and religion? The third basic instinct is the title of the book, How Religion Doesn't Get You. Alan S. Key, the author, thethirdbasicinstinct.com, his website. Alan, welcome to the show.
Hi there. It's a pleasure to be here. The name's Alex, by the way, but no hard feelings there.
Oh, Alex. I'm sorry.
No problem.
Yes, I have your book right here in front of me, and it says Alex on it. Holy cow. I just said it. So, Alex, give me your... we have three basic instincts. The first two, everybody knows. They are?
Well, to get into the first one, let me ask you a very simple question. Why do you eat?
Typically because I'm hungry.
Right, and in fact, most people answer that question by talking about survival, which is the first basic instinct.
Right.
You've actually alluded to something interesting, which is the pleasure of eating or the pain of hunger. So there's three very real reasons why people eat. Now, if I was to ask someone out of the blue without mentioning basic instincts why they have sex, very rarely would they mention the basic instinct of reproduction. They would mention pleasure as the reason for having sex. In fact, most people take precautions not to have children. In Canada, one in three couples are what we call dinks, which is double income, no kids. Right. So actually, there are even married couples that are obviously not having children. So going back to eating for a second, those three very real reasons why people eat, survival, to gain pleasure, and to avoid the pain of hunger. So what does it all mean? Why are the three reasons? And an answer to that question should shed light on everything we do, because everything we do involves some sort of feeling of pleasure, pain, or other emotion.
And so you're suggesting that, you know, I mean, this is kind of NLP 101. People are typically motivated by moving away from pain or moving toward pleasure. Or Abraham Maslow, you know, his hierarchy of human needs is survival and homeostasis at the bottom. And, you know, as you move up through the social needs and the intellectual needs, and at the very top, you had self-actualization. Where does that get us to the third instinct?
Well, before we get there, I don't know if it's something that is necessarily talked about in public circles or in the educational circles. And we're living in a world in which heart disease is the number one killer on the planet. And experts believe is completely avoidable in 90% of cases through change of diet or lifestyle. We're also living in a world where there's suicide bombings. Now, if I was to ask a suicide bomber, a prospective suicide bomber, why they're doing it, I'm sure they would give reasons. But how deeply do they understand their minds?
Right. So, Alan, I've spent a fair amount of time with your book, and it's a very your book, The Third Basic Instinct, and it's a very articulate screed, essentially, against religion. You know, you purport to prove how or demonstrate how God came about and why it's all BS, and it actually retards our growth. I'm curious how you reconcile that with the fact, which I didn't find in your book, that neurologists at the University of San Diego and others, now this has been replicated dozens of times around the world, you know, they started out looking at epileptics, and they found that people who had these trance experiences, these transcendental experiences of transcendence, tended more often than not to be epileptic. And then they, you know, talking to brain surgeons, found that there were certain parts of the brain that you could stimulate with electrodes and produce this experience of oneness with everything, oneness with the universe, oneness with God. And that, so there's a biological system here at operation. And then you compare that, you look then at the study that was published, this was the back 4 years, 5 years ago, I'm sorry, in the National Association of the American Institute of Mental Health, in June of 2000, Rice is the researcher, and they're talking about how in this study, religious people tend to be more interdependent, and non-religious people tend to be more independent, which gets us back to the original question, which is, why is there a biological mechanism that produces a religious response? And the you know, there's a lot of theorists out there who are suggesting that the reason why we seem to be wired for religion, or at least some of us seem to be wired for religion, is that it increases interdependence, which is good for the survival of the species, which gets us back to your first two instincts.
And there's certainly many ways to look at why people believe in a God. What I've purported is that the third basic instinct is the reason that religions come about in the first place. So there may be many reasons why it's beneficial to survival to believe in a God. And I don't actually go that route in the book, because I think even if there is a benefit to believing in a God, I don't think people do it for that reason. I don't think people, you know, one day think, you know, I'm going to feel better or have a better chance of survival if I believe in a God, therefore I'm going to believe in a God. So, and I think most, and you also,
I think they do.
You also alluded to temporal lobe epilepsy, which, again, is more of a minority of people who actually experience that and suffer from that. I don't think we're talking about religion as a minority thing necessarily.
No, but I'm suggesting that most, I would submit to you, and I may be wrong on this, but, you know, there is some statistical backup for this, that most people who would describe themselves as spiritual forget whether they even describe their being, you know, monotheistic or pantheistic or animistic or whatever, who describe themselves as spiritual, can identify some point in their lives where they have had an experience of transcendence. And that has then been translated into some sort of a belief system, whether it's, you know, the Great Spaghetti Monster or whether it's Jesus or Muhammad or whatever. And that is associated with feeling stuff, just like hunger is associated with feeling stuff, just like sexual behavior is associated with feeling stuff. All that stuff comes out of, gee, that was really pleasurable. I want more of it.
Right. The way I look at what you're saying is that it might affect the tendency of one group of people to be religious versus another. I don't see that as a reason for religion coming about in society, you know, thousands or millions of years ago in the first place. I think it needs something more.
But it did.
And I believe that's the third basic instinct.
And the third basic instinct is what?
Well, the first 30 pages of the book actually gives the reader a chance to discover the third basic instinct for themselves.
So you're just going to tease our listeners.
Yeah, I hate to tease the audience, but I do not want to spoil that experience for the prospective reader.
Okay, all righty. I understand, and Alan, thank you very much for coming on the show. I appreciate it. I'm sorry. Let me tell you, as an author, you will sell more books if you tell people the whole story. You know, no offense, Alan, but I've written a lot of books, and I've done a lot of radio shows, and if you lay out the story and you say, you know, in our book, Legacy of Secrecy, The Long Shadow of the JFK Assassination, that we're going to give away by Lamar Waldron and Tom Hartman, that we're going to give away to one of our listeners today who has the best blog post at tomhartman.com, in Sean's brilliant opinion, now that she's back in the studio with her badly broken ankle after three surgeries. Ouch, ouch, ouch. In our book, Legacy of Secrecy, we lay out how Carlos Marcello and Santo Trafficante and Johnny Roselli, the mob, put together this plan to kill John Kennedy. They did it on the back of a secret program that Kennedy had to assassinate Castro that was going to be executed in December of 1963. When they killed Kennedy, they made the other members of the Kennedy administration believe that Castro had done it, so they thought that their own plan had blown up in their face, so they went into cover-up mode. And then they used the same people, basically, and, you know, with a little bit of money from some right-wing racists, J.B. Stoner and company down in Atlanta, a bunch of right-wing racists, to kill Martin Luther King. And, you know, and we lay out with an enormous amount of, I mean, this is 900 pages, an enormous amount of documentary evidence, and if you have any interest at all in the Kennedy assassination or in the King assassination, which is the second book, our first book, Ultimate Sacrifice, is about the Kennedy assassination. This book, Legacy of Secrecy, is about the King assassination and revisits the Kennedy assassination. So anyhow, you just lay that stuff out and you tell people the whole story. They'll say, oh, that's cool. You know, and if they're interested, they will go out and buy your book. But if you tease things, people tend to not, you know, they tend not to remember them, and they tend to say, eh, you know, we're not going to go there. So anyhow, I was probably continuing to call him Alan. My apologies for the long lesson there. But anyhow, we're going to go to a break right now. It's 16 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman radio program. Larry Scott from VAWatchdog.org is up next. And we're going to be talking about the state of veterans affairs in the United States. And I'll be picking up your calls after the bottom of the hour at 866-303-2270. Stick around. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Fresh opinions and news you can use. This is your home for progressive talk. AirAmerica.com.
Go that nobody knows where the rivers flow, and I call it home. And there's no more lies in the dark, the best is life, and nobody cries. There's only butterflies. Take me away.
Taking back the mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman with you. Hit 21 minutes past the hour. Larry Scott on the line with VAWatchdog.org. If you have anything to do with a veteran, and odds are most of you do, if you want to know what's going on in the world of veterans, American veterans, VAWatchdog.org is the place to find it out. And Larry Scott is the guy to tell you. Hey, Larry, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Tom. Thanks for the kind words. And lots of news, but I'm afraid it's a secret. You're going to have to buy my book to find out.
That's great. No. After I got off that segment, I turned to Louise after we were off the air, and I said, "Do I sound like I'm in a really pissy mood? Because I sent off an upset email to somebody this morning. I dumped a guest, but I just, you know, I'm sorry. Teasing my listeners is not fair. I just don't.
No, that was not a fair thing to do, and I really did like the way you handled it.
Thank you. Although I probably should have gone to a break a little earlier. Anyhow, Larry Scott is with us. VAWatchdog.org is the website. Larry, General Eric Shinseki has been appointed or nominated. It's not official, but Obama has put him forward as VA secretary.
Yes.
You have some thoughts on that?
Yeah, this looks like a very, very good move for the Department of Veterans Affairs, for the head of the VA. General Shinseki made quite a name for himself back in 2003 with his prescient comment that we were going to need more troops to handle the aftermath in Iraq. That, of course, went up against what Donald Rumsfeld was saying, and he lost his job because of that. General Shinseki is thought of quite highly in the veteran community. All the veterans groups are really behind this man, and they feel that he is the natural leader to come in, shake things up at the VA, do it effectively, especially in the area of benefits claims now, where we have almost 800,000 people waiting to have their claims adjudicated. There's that big of a backlog. So a lot of positive thoughts here, a lot of good energy going out, and it looks like they're going to make changes. We just found out this morning, too, rather interesting. It looks like they're going to fast-track this. And the way they're going to do it is rather unusual. Senator Daniel Akaka, who heads the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs, is going to hold the first confirmation hearing, on January 14th. Now, this is before we even have a new president. Now, they can do that. And they can ask him questions, and they can take his testimony, but, of course, they can't vote. And what the plan is right now, and we're just finding out about this, is the moment the inauguration is over and official on January 20th, these names will go forward to the various Senate committees, so the nominations at that point will be official. The plan is to have the Veterans Affairs Committee and other committees actually meet that afternoon, vote on those names, and send them to the full Senate. And there is actually a rumor floating now that the full Senate will meet on the afternoon or evening of January 20th to vote in these new cabinet secretaries.
Wow. They're talking about hitting the ground running.
Boy, I'm telling you, I've never seen anything like this, Tom, but they want to get all the hearings out of the way, you know, ahead of time when they can, right after the first of the year. And, of course, they can't vote until actually we have a new president and President Obama submits their names. And then they're talking about doing the whole thing within hours and literally having a cabinet assembled within a day or maybe even less.
Remarkable. Now, meanwhile, the U.S. Supreme Court is getting its hand into the veterans law issue, as it were.
Something we hardly ever see. Veterans law is usually handled at one court down, which is the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Occasionally, a veteran's case will come up to the Supreme Court. And on Monday, we had oral arguments in a case called Peek versus Sanders. It's extremely complicated, but basically what the court is going to decide is whether or not the VA bears the burden of proof that it informed a veteran of information needed to process a claim. Veterans are saying, hey, you're not informing me that I need to submit this, this, and this to get my disability claim processed. So that is a real brief version of what the Supreme Court heard. You know, legal scholars are not going to be holding their breath for this decision later next year, Tom, but in the veterans community, it is big news, and we look for the Supreme Court to uphold veterans in this case and not the VA, who says, we kind of help you.
Right. It's an interesting one. And the two new VA Inspector General reports are faulting the VA. Is this correctable stuff? Is this Bush administration?
It's more of the same. It is more of the same that we've seen. The VA has had a terrible problem with scheduling appointments and also with tracking the scheduling of appointments. And we've actually found in some cases that they're actually making up information and forwarding it. So what we found with these two Inspector General reports is there was a problem with scheduling medical appointments. They weren't doing it efficiently. They weren't filling in holes in the schedule, to the loss of probably over $70 million a year, the Inspector General found. And then, of course, the worst part here was they found that in certain areas of the country, they were fudging the numbers and making themselves look like they were more efficient in their scheduling than they actually were. These are the kind of things we hope that General Shinseki can come in and just take over and say, enough, do it by the book and do it right, take care of the veterans.
Sounds like a plan. And you can read all about it over at VAWatchdog.org. And Larry Scott, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you again, Tom.
Good talking with you. It is 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, and we will be picking up your calls, 866-303-2270, on the other side of this break, and talking more about what's going on in Illinois. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
This is Ted Sorensen, proud to be talking on Air America.
This is your home for progressive talk.
AirAmerica.com. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmerica.com.
There's a moon across the border in the Louisiana sky. I smell a bunch of champagne, I hear silver wings, and in a way, Merrill Haggard flies. And that good old boy will find a band of gold on the stereo. Hey, then my mama's coming call, see where she's gone. You'll say, no, no.
Yeah, we've always got the radio, and a fine thing it is. Tom Hartman here with you on the radio. And time now. Yes, it's a...
Baby, take off your coat. Real slow.
It's a full Monty alert.
Baby, take off your shoes. I'll take your shoes.
Well, sort of a full Monty alert.
Baby, take off your dress. Yes, yes, yes. You can't leave your hat on.
Yeah, leave your hat on. Well, here is this amazing story. The perfect couple, Lee Trung and Aiko. This fellow, too busy to find love, has invented his idea of the perfect woman, a female robot. Inventor Lee Trung, 33, created Aiko, said to be in her 20s, with a stunning 32-23-33 figure, shiny hair and delicate features. She remembers his favorite drink, does simple cleaning and household tasks. She's a whiz at math. So far, he has spent 14,000 British pounds building her. She does his bookkeeping. He is a scientific genius from Brampton in Ontario, Canada, said he had no time to find a real partner, so he designed one using the latest technology. He said she's not anatomically correct, but she could be tweaked to become so. Yes, the odd pair go out for drives together in the Canadian countryside before sitting down at the dinner table, although Aiko, the robot, never eats anything. Lee said so far she can understand and speak 13,000 different sentences in English and Japanese, so she's already fairly intelligent. She has a touch-sensitive face and body, so she reacts if shown affection or if she's hurt. He says like a real female, she will react to being touched in certain ways. If you grab or squeeze too hard, she will try to slap you. He says women are generally impressed and try to talk to her, but the men always want to touch her, and if they do it the wrong way, they get a slap. Hmm. Yeah, that is weird. That takes the cake. And I guess it probably should have been predictable. Judy in Danville, Virginia. Hey, Judy, thanks for waiting on hold so long. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. I hope my radio phone is still up because it's starting to fade. Blagojevich frightens me to death because I'm wondering how many compatriots he has in the Senate and Congress. I moved to the south side of Virginia from New York, and we're going down like a house of cards around here. We lost Dan River Mills. We've lost all kinds of textile work in south side of Virginia. The part of North Carolina that's contiguous to us has lost all kinds of furniture manufacturing jobs. These people need jobs. They don't have transferable skills. These were subsistence-level jobs, not affluent jobs. You know, the kind of folks who buy from rent-to-own stores.
Right.
And in terms of the real help we need and what we elected Obama to do, can he do it with the people who are in the Congress and Senate now?
If your question is Rod Blagojevich the exception or the rule, I strongly believe he's very much the exception. And I've known politicians for a long chunk of my life. In fact, back when I was in my late teens, early 20s, one of my best friends and roommates for a while was the youngest elected member of the Michigan House of Representatives. And my wife's dad was the assistant attorney general for the state of Michigan, you know, seeped in deep in politics. My roommate was a Republican. Her dad was a Democrat. My dad was very involved with Republican politics. And I've got a lot of friends or acquaintances, I guess, a few friends who are politicians right now. And I know from being not on the inside as an elected official, but, you know, damn close to it, that the kind of stuff that Rod Blagojevich was doing is the kind of stuff that the vast majority of American politicians would and do and are just absolutely horrified by. They're also horrified by the state of lobbying. You know, you look back when Ronald Reagan came into office, there were fewer than 300 registered lobbyists in Washington, D.C. Now there's over 36,000. We have a real problem with the legal version of what Blago was doing illegally, which is, you know, a form of bribery, essentially. And we've got to get that under control.
The other thing that frightens me to death is that the poverty community down here is burgeoning in other ways. Our local Roanoke television news just did a story this morning, and the upshot of it was that only 53%, 5-3, of Roanoke High School students are graduating. I mean, yeah. We are going down the toilet.
Well, and what's happened, exactly, Judy, and what has happened with that is that high school students are getting the message that having a high school degree is not enough to get a job anymore. There aren't trade schools anymore. The unions are going away, so you don't have, you know, master skills kind of things, you know, where you can become a tool and die maker, or you can become, you know, whatever, fill in the blank. I mean, that's the one I'm familiar with. It was my dad's business. And so they're the kids who don't feel that they can either financially or intellectually handle college are just saying, to hell with it. You know, I'm going to check out now in the ninth or tenth grade and get a job, because when I graduate from high school, it's not going to make any difference. And in many cases, and in many parts of the country, that's the truth. And that's because of this loss of manufacturing and because of the loss of the ethos and the whole culture around it. I mean, in Germany, to become a bricklayer, you have to do a 2-year apprenticeship. They take it very seriously how you lay bricks so that you do it right. Judy, you raised a great point. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. This is the death of the American middle class. I mean, right across the board. Here, and it's the consequence of insane trade policies and equally insane politicians, some of them out there. Steve in Eagle Creek, Oregon. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, good morning, Tom. Two things. They're going to keep trying to kneecap Obama as much as they possibly can. I think that's going to be the only thing that the Republican Party and the opposition does, is do their dead level best to kneecap everything.
Absolutely. This is the beginning of the Clinton wars all over again. This is, you know, of the Republicans, you know, as I said earlier, you know, what he, you know, Hillary fired a travel agent? Well, we've got to investigate that. There's probably a crime. And, the governor of Illinois is corrupt. Well, let's look at the senator from Illinois. There's got to be an association.
So I think what everybody has to do is simply understand that this is their game. But I think that the tone of the country has changed substantially to where that this is just going to be sort of a background hum now.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I really wanted to stress was that there has been all of the planning, the training, there exists a trained workforce to do the kind of an infrastructure project that could be a showcase for the rest of the United States just here in Portland. That's the MAX light rail system.
Right.
We have here in Portland, we've got a system going on right now that is the top of the line. Ask anybody that uses the system. It's got its problems, but if you expanded that system to every single small surrounding community, this is the kind of system that you're going to need because of peak oil. If you've got a light rail system that goes out to Canby, if it goes out to Sandy, if it goes out to all the surrounding communities around, this can be the kind of a lifeline that can give rewards on an economic basis for the really
simple truth of this, Steve, is that when you look at the communities that for a long time have been connected, I mean, I'm thinking of the old Dick Van Dyke show when I was a kid, and he lived out in a bedroom community in Connecticut, as I recall, of New York. He worked in Manhattan. In my recollection, he worked, you know, he was a screenwriter in a TV show, worked in New York. And the reason why he lived in New Rochelle was because there was a train that stopped there. So he could take a train to New York to go to work every day, and he'd come back. And you look at where the stops are on the light rail systems or on the old-fashioned heavier rail systems, but still they're used as urban, suburban transport for people. You look at where those are in the established cities, you know, in New York, in Washington, D.C., in Chicago, and particularly in the Northeast Corridor around Boston. Well, not so much around Boston. It's a pretty dysfunctional system there. But, well, actually, they've got a pretty good system, too, in some ways, the Red and Blue Line. And so what you find is that those communities are thriving where there's a stop. You know,
where
there's a station.
What I see coming up with peak oil and everything else happening, this is the way to, I mean, this could be the biggest gift that anyone could give the Pacific Northwest, is to expand that light rail system over this entire area.
Anywhere else in the country, Steve. Well said. Thank you very much. Jack in West Palm Beach, Florida, listening on Winds. Hey, Jack,
Tom,
what's up?
It's a pleasure talking to you. I'm so glad that you are there.
Thank you.
And in your case, the brain does come with a body, which is very refreshing.
Thank you.
I wanted to bring something up, and I really hope that you, pick up on this every now and then, is that people that are making threats, racial threats, like it happened when Obama was, elected finally,
right.
It should not be an empty threat. People that make that kind of threat should be put in jail, because, you see, they are using the freedom of speech as a tool, saying, well, I'm entitled to my opinion, but you see, that's inflicting a mic freedom.
But, you know, here's the problem, Jack. In Germany, for example, it's illegal to...
Let me finish the sentence, and then I'll listen to you. What I'm saying to you, because they actually threaten somebody else's life.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
No, I agree. Here's the problem, though. In Germany, for example, it's illegal to sing the Horst Wessel song, you know, the old Hitler marching song. And so, you know, people do it for fun, you know, behind the scenes. I don't think that you can legislate talk. That's my concern. But, Jack, it's a subject that's worthy of further discussion, and we really should probably do an hour on it one of these days. You know, what are the limits of hate speech, and what are the points at which you criminalize or don't? Oh, yeah. Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa. Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, talk radio for the sane among us. And
you know it's nice when the postman has a letter in his sack for you.
Well, or at least a blog post for you. We have a winner in our... I'm not sure winner is the right word. Sean has picked her favorite blog post over TomHartman.com. for the day, and this person is going to receive a copy of Legacy of Secrecy, The Long Shadow of the JFK Assassination by Lamar Waldron and Tom Hartman. And Sean, who is our lucky winner today?
Our lucky recipient.
Recipient, thank you.
Call him a recipient. It's West Davis, who wrote and said that he heard you talking about the Grinch earlier today, and he couldn't help but notice something. The Grinch is a greener, skinnier, better-looking, friendlier version of Karl Rove. What do you think?
Or Bill O' the Clown. Okay, congratulations, Weston. You're going to get a copy of Legacy of Secrecy. And thank you very much, Sean. And good to have you back in the studio here.
Thank you, Tom.
Yes. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Judy in Hollywood, Florida. Hey, Judy, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I've been listening to you. You're wonderful. One of the things that's bothering me about the Blagojevich thing is, the guy's a real lowlife, and he deserves to get everything he's going to get. But somehow I get that feeling
once again, we've got the little bit of that Karl Rove Republican spin machine to sublimate the anger that the American people really feel about the Bush administration committing the real crimes. I mean, it's almost like going after the pickpocket versus the CEO who just, you know, absconded with all your pension plans.
Well,
I mean, these guys
way.
Committed treason, murder, war profiteering, torture,
right.
And everyone's going to take this guy and put him on the rack, and I get it, but I don't. I almost was confused even more because Patrick Fitzgerald's animated behavior over this being so, you know, in such disdain of this man and so, you know, taken back by the racketeering, and yet when he was dealing with Scooter, he was kind of calm, you know, kind of robot-like. I just get the feeling that once again we have another distraction.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I think that your point is really well taken, that we should put these things in perspective and
yeah.
and keep in mind that the Bush administration has committed some god-awful crimes. But that doesn't in any way say that Governor Blago should, you know, be patted on the head and sent his merry way.
Absolutely
not.
This guy
needs to have
his
butt nailed to the wall. Yeah, and but here's the big here's where it really gets to what you're talking about, Judy, and that is the talking points that went out to all the right wing talk show hosts that I'm holding in front of me. I'm waving at the camera here. RNC Research, you can see the thing. Obama induces labor. Did the Obama campaign use the SEIU? I mean, they are going to try to use this not just to take down Blagojevich, but also to attack labor. I mean, this is this whole thing. This is. You know, the Republicans are they are back in Clinton mode, and it had and I've been waiting for the day that it started, and it started yesterday, today, and it is going full tilt boogie. Judy, I got to move along, but thank you very much for the call. Bob in Portland, hey Bob.
Hey Tom, how you doing? I'm a retired union bricklayer here in Portland, and I heard you talking earlier to a person, I think, or you were mentioning that the apprenticeship in Germany is.
Yes, well, I know that because when I was working in Russia. And we were building buildings in Russia, and the Russian labor that we had, they didn't know how to lay bricks, and they built a chimney that was just an absolute fire hazard. And we had some German managers there, and I was standing right there, and the conversation happened, where the guy from Germany is saying, you know, and this was all in German. The guy in Germany was saying, in our country, it takes 2 years before you can legally lay a brick. You have to go through an apprenticeship, and you have to learn how to do it right. And the guy from Russia is going, you know, that doesn't make any sense. Anybody can lay a brick. And I'm looking at this disaster of a chimney that this guy built, thinking, yeah, it makes a hell of a lot of sense.
Yeah, here in Portland, it's a 6,000-hour apprenticeship. And the reason why Republicans hate two things they hate, trial lawyers and unions. And if you notice, when they go to attack trial lawyers in the unions, they always go after the worker rights. They don't want us to have be protected with worker rights or
yep.
pensions or anything like that. And they always try to attack the paycheck protection and stuff. Everything that unions are about are for the good of people. And Republicans, they hate people that can negotiate a good living. The bottom line, they don't want you to earn a good living out there or negotiate health care or retirement or vacation pay or medical and dental. They don't want you to have those things. They want you to struggle and be at the bottom of the food chain. They only want the special, few privileged, elitist, social economic stalwarts in the American society to succeed in this country.
And there is a very rational, in their opinion, reason for this, by the way. And because, Bob, I think the average listener might think that you're overstating it or that I do when I say essentially the same thing as you said. But if you go back and you read Russell Kirk's 1953 book, The Conservative Mind, in which he started the modern, you know, conservative movement, or you read William F. Buckley's writings, or Alan Greenspan, for example, in the Wall Street Journal in 1997, you get that what these guys, and they sometimes they just talk about it right out loud, that when the middle class was at the peak of its strength in the 1960s and the early 1970s, we had social chaos in the United States. And they believe that that's a bad thing. Again, when the middle class was at its peak in the 1770s, we had social chaos in the United States. It was called the Revolutionary War. In the 60s, it was the Culture Revolution or whatever you want to call it. And in both cases, the response of conservatives was to say, these people have too much time and money on their hands. We need to make them poorer so they will stop thinking that they've got the time and freedom to be out there protesting and demanding rights. And you said it so well, Bob. thank you very much for the call and for setting that up for me. This is just where it's going. It's absolutely where it is going. Coming up tomorrow, it's going to be a fascinating day. Judge Jim Gray. Actually, you're going to like this. Judge Jim Gray is. We're going to talk about our drug laws and how they've failed. Plus, New York Times bestselling author Gene Stone has the perfect stocking stuffer idea for you. And don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.
Stay tuned for Doing Time with Ron Kuby, coming up next on AirAmerica.com.